Welcome to the Barcelona Podcast, bringing you the hottest breaking stories from the Camp Nou. I am Francesc Tomàs, as seen as ESPN, Guardian and BarcaBlog.com, and I am joined by nobody. I'm joined by nobody because Dan is somewhere in Europe. I know he's been in Barcelona, we'll hear that in a minute. He's somewhere in Europe, maybe Germany, maybe Italy, enjoying his honeymoon, being all happy, being all lovey-lovey, which is lovely. Really proud, but you know, I'm by myself. So I am happy for him, but not very impressed. If you are new here, please consider subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or wherever you get your podcast. If you're listening to us on an internet browser, go to tbpod.link/sub. That is tbpod.link/sub. In order to subscribe to our episodes to make sure you never ever lose another one. If you are feeling the Christmas spirit, as am I, please consider supporting the show by becoming a Patreon at tbpod.link/Patreon. That's tbpod.link/Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Or basically, you can just tap inside your podcasting app right now. Yes, right now. In order to follow the link and support the show there. We do love bringing the show every single week, and with your support, you will help us increase the quality, and hopefully, soon enough, whenever baby lets me, we can increase the quantity back again, and we'll be able to do that with your support, and we really thank you for all of that in advance. I'd like to read an iTunes review that our long-term listener, Christo, from South Africa, left for us on iTunes. It's really brief, but to the point, and we really appreciate it. He said, high quality analysis and content. The hosts have fantastic dynamic. I know, man, but you know, Dan's left me by myself here. And they both bring fresh, insightful commentary to all aspects of the club. And he did give us 5 stars. Christo, very, very grateful for your support over the weeks and now months. And thank you for your review on iTunes as well. In episode 51, of the Barcelona podcast, we're going to be focusing on a different structure because obviously Dan's not here. So we're going to start with La Gran Pregunta, which is what 5 moves does Barcelona make in January? Then we've got a very, very special feature, which is the honeymoon tourist Dan talking to us from inside the Camp Nou and then from the Camp Nou Museum and basically the whole Camp Nou experience. He took some time away from his time with his lovely newly crowned wife. Crowned was put there intentionally. And he's got a little feature from us from Barcelona, and I really can't wait to share that with you. Then I've had the pleasure earlier on tonight to talk to Lee Roden in an interview. He was working in ESPN when I was there as well, and he was the Barcelona correspondent there for several years, and we worked together, and I am delighted that to be able to bring that to you so that you can see how knowledgeable he is about Barca. And finally, we're going to listen to La Ronda, which is the quickfire listener questions. Really hugely grateful to every single one of you who left a question today. I was sort of begging on Twitter saying, please, I'm by myself, send a lot of questions. And we had an absolute ton. So really grateful. We're gonna get there very, very soon. Well, at the end of the program. Episode 51. Of the Barcelona podcast starts right here. Right, so let's get stuck in. La gran pregunta is, what 5 moves must Barça make in January in order to move forward and challenge for the treble? I've divided it into 5 different categories. The first one is undoubtedly the most important, which is offloading Arda Turan. The guy has been useless this season to the point that he hasn't even featured. Of course, you can argue that, you know, he's been injured and, you know, the manager hasn't trusted him very much. But to be honest, I'm no doctor myself, but I really seriously doubt that he's been injured as many times as he said. There's been a couple of times in which the media, Catalan media, has reported that Arda was about to get the green light and then suddenly he's had another incident. You know, call me accepted, call me a bad person, call me whatever you want. But I doubt that he's that unlucky with injuries. I would have thought, and this is my feeling right now and has been for a while, that he's basically protecting himself from a potential injury that could damage his opportunity to join another team in January. My second point may also be a bit controversial. I'm really honestly not trying to be controversial, but I do realize that this could be a sensitive subject. For me, keeping Mascherano at the Camp Nou is essential. Of course, and I do get it, there are several players that have been granted the Carta de Libertad, which is basically being allowed to leave on a free transfer in several times in recent years. I don't agree with that. You know, I do get that, you know, if you're a La Masia homegrown player, you didn't cost us anything. So I do accept in a way that if you've served for 15 years, you may decide to go elsewhere, e.g. Xavi, for example, that Barca don't make any profit on that. I do understand that. But in Mascherano's case, he decided and he did say in the summer that he wanted to stay for the season, which is why Valverde decided, and I don't really think this was right either, but he decided to move forward with just four centre-backs. So you had Piqué and Umtiti, which arguably was clear they were going to be the starters, and I think Mascherano should have seen that as well. Mascherano, you know, fantastic player that has given a lot of service throughout the years, but obviously being, in a way, hit by Father Time in a not very kind way, although he can still do the job, and he's shown that several times when he's played this season. And finally, Thomas Vermaelen, which, let's face it, is a question mark in terms of fitness, and that's what Valverde decided to do. Fast forward 3 months, and we've got Umtiti having performed excellently, but now being injured for the next 2 months, which is really unfortunate because he was becoming, and has been throughout the season, our best, most reliable, most commanding defender. So I would say that Mascherano has to stay because basically we don't have a reliable replacement. And of course, pretty much everyone in the Catalan media agrees that Gerry Mina has been signed, but the plan is for Gerry Mina get to the Camp Nou in the summer, not now. And Mascherano was going to have that transition year. And I think that, you know, as unpopular as this may sound, the club need to hold him accountable to his promise and to the contract that he did sign. So whether there is an agreement now to say, right, okay, Javier, if you stay with us until the summer, then maybe we let you go on a free, I don't know. Obviously, I'm not behind the scenes as such, but I would say that even if the player is unhappy to stay because of what's coming in the summer, I think Barca for once need to put their foot down and ensure that the player stays because we need him, and that's that. The third move that Barcelona should definitely make in January is attempt the signing of Philippe Coutinho. And please note the note, attempt. Not necessarily complete, but definitely attempt. So you may be wondering, why do you put it in this list? Well, I think Barca need to attempt the signing of Coutinho and for Liverpool to know that they're still interested. Maybe Liverpool decide to give a price and to say, actually, if you pay, say, 150 million, you can have the player. But even though I think that that's a huge amount that we shouldn't go to, I think Barca should be seen to be keeping the interest, not necessarily just for Liverpool to see, which is important, but also for Coutinho and his entourage, his entorno, to realise and to know that Barca are not going to give up the chase. And even if we weren't successful now in January, you can attempt it again in the summer, hopefully before the World Cup starts, because, you know, let's say Brazil have a great tournament, which likely, I'm not going to say it's certain, but it is likely that will happen, then we need to be sure that we get a good price. And that's not always going to be a certainty. So attempting the signing of Coutinho should be the third step that Barca should take. In my fourth point, I'm going to move on to what could happen and who should be signed if Coutinho was just not released by Liverpool. And to me, is sign Ozil from Arsenal. As we discussed at length in our previous podcast, Ozil would be a great addition for Barca's attacking third. Obviously, he's got the experience, he's got the know-how. He's played for Real Madrid before, but, you know, that doesn't bother me one bit because, obviously, there's been a club in the middle and we're not signing him straight from Madrid. And to be honest, even if we did that, it's always great to sign players from Madrid who can do a job for us. Someone who would be an immediate impact player. Would he be a starter from the beginning? I doubt that he would, simply because Iniesta, I think, still has quite a bit to give. As we spoke in our previous podcast, which I strongly recommend you go back and listen if you haven't. I think most of you would have, but if you haven't, it definitely is there. Just tap inside your app in order to access that. I think Ozil would be a great addition simply because he would bring something different to the team that we just simply don't have. And, as much as we want to say that Andre Gomez, even Turan, if we weren't able to basically offload him and get rid of him and save money as a result, just don't have. You could argue Denis Suarez is beginning to show glimpses of that, but, let's face it, I think we're going to challenge for the treble, which has to be our target every single season. I think that we're lacking that degree of creativity that Ozil would bring. So step four, sign Ozil. And this brings us to our final point, which is ensuring a full recovery of Ousmane Dembele. Sure, we did sign him in the summer, and I do get it, he was quite expensive. And of course, a lot of us are very disappointed, I think the vast majority of us are, that we've only seen a game and 15 minutes of Dembele at Barca. Now, that seems to be about to change. Catalonia Radio reports that within the next week, so basically by the time you hear this podcast maybe, Dembele is going to rejoin the team, not just for sort of exercises on the side, but also for rondos, which is the circle passing exercise that Barca do all the time, and slowly but surely being fully integrated into what the team needs and the team routines. So I think we need to grant Dembele enough patience and understanding in order to enable him to succeed, not necessarily immediately. I think that obviously he needs to make an impact to justify his starting 11 position, which I'm sure he will get based on everything that I just mentioned. So just to sum it up, number one, offload Arda Turan. Number two, keep Mascherano. Number three, attempt the signing of Coutinho again. Number four, sign Ozil if Coutinho was not released by Liverpool. And step five, ensure full recovery of Ousmane Dembele. That closes the La Gran Pregunta. And I am delighted to say that up next, that's pretty cool to say, up next, we've got Dan Hilton, our one and only Dan Hilton, from his honeymoon in Barcelona. I believe inside the Camp Nou, or maybe somewhere across the, maybe diving off some window, doing something weird and crazy with his lovely wife in the Camp Nou Museum and the whole beautiful, lovely city of Barcelona. Enjoy.
Hey, Frances. So since I'm at the match right now, I thought you'd like to hear my two cents on what happened here in this 2-0 victory against Celta de Vigo. It wasn't a packed house since this game is on a Saturday afternoon here in Barcelona, but still there were tons of people in the stands, and I thought the chanting was pretty great, and I can only imagine how many people were here for El Clasico or one of the big matches in the Champions League, just because, again, on a Saturday afternoon, which is, again, mainly just kids even with the chanting, it was still a fun atmosphere. And speaking of the atmosphere, though, of course, the first goal being Messi, I don't need to tell anybody about that. It's not necessarily just my two cents on the Messi goal, but it's a fact that I just want to kind of rub it in your face that I got to see a Messi goal recently, and I can tell everyone, my children, grandchildren, whoever, forever, that I saw Lionel Messi score a goal, and that's pretty awesome. But the gift that I've also brought with that goal is here's some audio of the chants after the goal. Here we go. So with all the good of the Messi goal, though, there was also the goal that was scored by Luis Suarez and the goal that should have been scored by Luis Suarez but wasn't because it was called offsides. And now, here in the stadium, nobody could even tell that it was offsides at all. I think, again, obviously, in real time, everyone was cheering as if it was a goal and then noticing the offside flag late. And the tough thing was Luis Suarez had already turned his back and didn't even see the offside flag until it was blown dead. And so he didn't even celebrate the goal, but it was blown and he was upset with it. And, we can see the replay and look back on it, but that all really does transpire in real time. And I know we've seen plenty of of calls, but that official was right where he needed to be, and I don't know, the whole stadium thought he seemed to be onsides, and from my angle, he looked onsides too, but again, that's just a 2 cents, and I know you'll be talking more about the officials and their role and the role they have to play this season so for Barcelona, but as you kind of alluded to with the articles, Frances, and you praised the performance of the team not only against Valencia, but against Celta de Vigo, they were pressing, they were offensive, they had ideas, they were right in front of goal, and that Piqué goal, if anything, of course it wasn't a goal because Piqué missed the net, but that was a goal in itself, and a good run by Piqué that just didn't find the result, and the same thing with Messi, where he just held the ball on the touchline. This is now earlier in the game, but he held the ball on the touchline, and he was so close to getting it in. He beat four defenders and just couldn't put it in, and those are those moments in the stadium, and you really do feel it, that sometimes at home with Messi not on screen, you don't see it. And I kind of at times was just watching him no matter where the ball was on the field, because the moment he gets it, there's this belief. And that belief, I think, is what is really special about not only seeing it live, but being a fan of Barcelona. You put the ball at his feet and you have that faith that this Argentinian is going to do something with it. And that's kind of how the whole team, though, felt against Celta de Vigo, where there are times where you don't feel like they have anything going. Earlier this year, you look in that game against Las Palmas, even in from the closed door game, where it didn't feel like they had any forward thinking or were planning on winning that match. But in a game like this, they just seemed to be pushing and pushing and pressing and pressing, and you always had that belief. And speaking of the belief, Marc-Andre Ter Stegen, will continue to talk about him every week as he continues to wow us. He had a really good game, almost no blame for me on that first goal, and again in live time it just happened so quick, where that he was able to stave out a goal that really probably should have been in if it was a shot that wasn't directly at him, but he got a foot down, saved it, and then the putback was just too much for him to handle. So that said, other than Marc-Andre Ter Stegen, the one other player that I'd love for you to put in your La Bolsa, now I know Paco Alcácer will probably be there, not to continue to ruin your surprises, Frances, but I know Alcácer will probably be there. Denis Suarez has to be in there. I'll let you talk about why he's going to be in there. But the one thing I want to bring up to you, Frances, for you to think about is we'll talk about later about Denis Suarez if he continues to play the way that he played not only against Celta de Vigo, but has continued to play earlier on the season as well. And for Denis Suarez, I don't know if he's it's soon to be 24 years old in January. Is he going to be a late bloomer? Is he going to be able to raise his level? Or is his best still to come? Or is this just the kind of player that he's going to be? And I wonder and worry that this is the player that he's going to be. But I still think with more run and more opportunities, Denis Suarez in that midfield has creative ideas. He seems to want to be moving forward, pushing forward with the passing and with the balls forward. And I know I keep saying forward here, but that's everything that I keep thinking about when he has the ball at his feet, where even if he makes mistakes, he immediately treks back, and he seems like a guy that is trying to get every bit of his playing time. And so I know that there is better things to come for Denis Suarez. So, Frances, I'll jump out. I guess I got to get out of here. They're closing the stadium, so I'll talk to you in a bit. Hey, Frances, Dan again. So I just want to add a little bit of an addition to what I said earlier. Denis Suarez, after watching this Sporting CP, and no, while I wasn't at the stadium, I did get to watch the match, and Denis Suarez, again, awesome. He needs to be in La Bolsa, Frances. Put him in La Bolsa. Denis was really good, and again, leading to that second goal as well was a big part of that. And the last addition I just want to put into this edition of the Barcelona podcast, other than thanking you, Frances, for handling all the long talking and all the blah, blah, blah of the of every episode and handling all the editing and everything you've done for this one. Thanks for that. But the last thing I want to mention, though, is I did do the Camp Nou experience, which for those unfamiliar with visiting the stadium is you pay for a ticket and you can either have an audio guide and it walks you through it that way, or you don't. You just look at all the trophies and the museum and you go and walk through the stadium and you see all the different things. And so when last week we had made reference to our favorite Barca moments, which obviously were just the ones that we've seen. They weren't the whole history like the museum has of the players in the teens and the 20s and the 50s and the 60s and the 80s, if you will. But Luis pointed out on Twitter that we had missed talking about the Iniesta goal against Chelsea, which I am embarrassed that I missed. And so I would mention to both you and Luis that I hope I made up for it, because at the Camp Nou, I sat in front of these big, gigantic televisions, and I watched that goal on replay as they had it playing. You can actually choose to watch that goal. And I watched that goal on replay two or three times. And so my apologies to Luis for missing it the first time, but did I enjoy reliving it time and time again at the Camp Nou. Really, really exciting. And so that said, I just wanted to also bring up that for those who are able to do the experience, that's true, but for our so listeners who want to get us talking more about the history of the club, please let us know. Throw some of our questions that way in your listener questions, some of those, not just who are they going to sign in January or will we get Coutinho finally, but if you ever want to ask history about the club and things like that that require us to do any research, I'd be really excited to do that. There's a lot of great stuff at the museum there that even I learned and didn't know about, because while it is fun to talk about Messi and even recent history, because the club's recent history has written the greater picture of all the winning that FC Barcelona has done, other than Iniesta, Xavi, Puyol, and the rest that we remember, Barcelona have long had some of the best players of their eras, including Kubala, the Spanish Luis Suarez, Cesar Rodriguez, and Paulino Alcantara. And so there's so many of these great players and a rich history of the club that we support. And I think it's all fantastic stuff. So if you want to ever give us history questions about the club and want to learn more about the club, about the crest, about the start of the club, anything like that, shoot us those questions as well. We'd love to answer those questions in the listener question, which, again, Frances, thank you for handling today. And I, of course, will be back for next week's show, episode number 52, where we'll get back to our normal situation. But I got to go. It's time to finish up the honeymoon here in Barcelona. So, of course, at least on my end, Forza Barça.
Okay, so I really do hope that you enjoyed that. I certainly did. I am going to be honest, I'm a little bit jealous of the fact that Dan managed to experience such an incredible experience, for lack of a better word, back in Barcelona. I am gutted that I couldn't join him. I'm still working here in London. I've got another 2 more weeks of work until I can be off for a little while. But, you know, I didn't necessarily want to crush his honeymoon either. Crushing honeymoons is not something you should do. But, Dan, we are delighted that you clearly are enjoying your time. And we can't wait to have you back. But obviously, do enjoy your time, as clearly you are doing. Now, up next, which is still very cool to say, up next, we've got my interview with Lee Roden from ESPN. I hope you enjoy it. I certainly did. Right, so as we just said, we're really pleased to welcome Lee Roden to the Barcelona podcast. Lee has been working with many media outlets. I obviously know him better from the ESPN days, and it is an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Lee, how are you today?
Yeah, it's great, man. It's great to get the gang back together, the old ESPN gang.
Yeah, it is true. It's like a reunion, although we've never really technically met, have we?
No, it's a weird one. I think it must have been at least a year, around about a year, I guess, that we worked together, but always from different places, I guess.
It really was. So, obviously, I don't know about you, but I get asked about what is it like to work for ESPN many, many times. I get constant emails and people asking. I actually have never answered the question in the pod, so I think you're going to go first. Lee, what is it like to work for ESPN?
Yeah, I mean, well, the important part, obviously, is that I was a freelancer, so I wasn't like technically employed by them, although it was like a long-term contract. But for me, I mean, the really cool thing, and I think the cool thing that they do in comparison to a lot of other people, is they really put a lot of money into quality journalism about teams outside of just the kind of standard stuff. So, I mean, even like, you know, now it maybe doesn't seem like a difference, but, you know, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, to be employing like at least a couple of people, even on a regular freelance basis, to cover Barcelona in detail, to cover Real Madrid in detail, to cover Atletico Madrid in detail in English, there wasn't really anyone doing that. Most places would have, you know, one person, like Seth, for example, for The Guardian, doing all of Spanish football, you know, and that's the thing that really stood out for me. It felt like, I feel like they give people a lot of freedom too, you know, they trust your knowledge and they let you use that. So it was a real privilege and a pleasure to work with them.
Yeah, I would subscribe to that. That was definitely my feeling. They wanted to add a degree of professionalism, and they definitely hit jackpot with both of us, didn't they?
Yeah, I'll let someone else be the judge of that from my case. But no, it was really cool to work with you. It was nice because I think we both have a different tone, so it worked really well.
Of course. Now, I know that you've been traveling the world lately, and I understand that you just came back from Madrid.
Yeah, I was in Madrid last weekend, actually. It's my first little bit of Spanish football for a while, because for those that don't know me, which will be most people, obviously, I moved to news journalism. So I used to work a lot in Barcelona and work a lot in Spain, but now I'm working entirely in Sweden. So I got to the point where I wanted a break from football journalism, because I just feel like, I felt like at the time I'd kind of written just about everything I had in me, you know. And so I moved to news, but last weekend I went over to Madrid to go to the Wanda for the first time, which was cool. And I also saw the less glamorous but still interesting Getafe against Valencia. So I saw a couple of games, it was cool.
That's good. So I'm assuming you've been to the Camp Nou.
Yeah.
What
not
is that like?
Around, but I used to work at the Camp Nou a lot, yeah.
You used to work there, I didn't know that. Could you tell us more?
Well, yeah, I mean, I wasn't employed by Barcelona, but as a journalist, really, I think you should be going to games. So what I used to do was I would go and spend like maybe 10 days in Barcelona just working, and then come back home to work for like 4 weeks or so, and then go back out for another 10 days, 2 weeks, and home for 4 weeks. So I would usually do like two or three games at a time. I tend to do it when there was midweek games, when there was Copa del Rey or when there was Champions League. And yeah, it's a special place. I mean, it's nice, it's huge, but at the same time, and the press area is huge as well, but at the same time, like, there's a lot of regular faces, so you get to know a lot of the journalists, you make a lot of friends there, and then also you make friends at the club, and a lot of the people in the press department were really good to me, actually. They threw me a lot of bones, and were really great with accreditation and things like that, so I only have really good memories there. And the cool thing for me was as well, like, obviously, you know, I was going there just to watch as a spectator before I was a journalist. When I was in, well, I was in Sitges, a place south of Barcelona that you probably know.
Of course.
Yeah, learning Catalan when I was younger and I was a teenager. And, you know, the family I was learning Catalan from had their Barça socis, and they have the seats, and they would take me to games as part of my sort of payment. So going and doing that, and then, you know, like a few years later, going and working there regularly, it was just like a dream come true. And it's a palace of football, I would call it. It's just incredible.
That's a great way to call it. Yeah, that's a new one for me, but I'll stick with that. So I'm assuming you've been following this season. Hopefully that's not too much to assume. No. What are you thinking about Ernesto Valverde so far? Because obviously we're still unbeaten, but
yeah.
Most people, or some people more rather, don't really seem that confused and sort
like
of
defense.
Bought
yeah.
into it. So what's your view on that?
Well, first of all, I'll qualify it, right? So when I was covering Spanish football, what I prided myself on was detail. And I mean, literally, a Barcelona player couldn't breathe in public without me knowing about it. I was on top of everything. So to that standard, there's no doubt I don't have that same attention to detail now. But I do watch them and I follow them. And, well, there's a few things. The first thing I would say was that I don't think he is in the same bracket as the elite Barca managers, and I don't think that's controversial to say that. So if you want to go, you know, Cruyff, Guardiola, he's not there. And I'm not sure yet that he's in the sort of second tier, which I would say is Rijkaard, Luis Enrique, you know. But equally, you know, we're only almost halfway through the season. There's time yet, and general trophies tend to dictate how we think about people. I think a lot of the things about this Barca that I don't like is maybe a strong term, but I would perhaps have concerns about, are actually things that, to be honest, have been there for a long time, that were there under Luis Enrique too, that were there under, I mean, it's a bit unfair to judge, but under Tito Villanova when he was, you know, still coaching full time. And that is that they don't really consistently control games anymore. And I think that's been the case for a long time. And I think, you know, having that incredible forward line maybe papered over that a little bit because they almost didn't need to. But once you remove that, it starts to become apparent again, I think. And I mean, the other thing is, if you'll excuse me, he also evidently is working with a squad that is not as good as previous people have had. I don't think there's any doubt about that. So to be top of the league, to be a decent amount of points clear, to comfortably through in the Champions League with a squad that's not as good, and with a manager who I think we should have more realistic expectations of, you have to, you know, that so far is a positive, it's a success. And then maybe we'll reassess already at the end of that too. By the way, I think this sounds really harsh. I'm naturally a very cautious person. I think Valverde's a good manager. I wasn't convinced when they gave him the job that he as an exceptional manager, but to be honest, I think he was pretty much the only manager that was available and fit the mould at that period in time. It's not a, you know, last summer was not a particularly vintage time to try and find Barcelona managers. It's hard to think of how many sure bets there were available. So taking all that into account, I think people should be quietly content for the moment, even if there are things that still need to be done, obviously.
Yeah, that is our view as well. We've been talking in the podcast over the last, I would say, month now, that we need to be realistic with the quality of the squad. As you just mentioned, you know, not having Neymar literally with 3 weeks to go before the season actually started was a huge blow. And the fact that, you know, the signing that replaced in Dembele, which arguably you could argue is not at the same level, particularly yet because of his youth, starts playing a couple of matches, then gets injured, and he's going to be like a signing when he comes back. Our understanding is that this coming week, and this was confirmed by Catalunya Radio just yesterday, he's going to start training with the team again. I would assume on the way to the Clásico, but I would think that we don't necessarily want to rush him into that. I think the most important thing is that he gets better. So obviously we know Dembélé's coming back. Is there anyone else you would sign in January? There've been many names thrown around, but what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, some of the names that you see, like the one that gets bandied around a lot is Ozil, for example. They don't particularly inspire me. I don't know. I think in general, January signings are a difficult thing to pull off well. There have been some, like, I mean, the obvious example is Davids. He came in and pretty sure it was a winter window, right?
Mm-hmm.
And really helped turn that season around. But for the most part, they're difficult to get right.
So
I don't know.
So no Coutinho?
You know, where does Coutinho play in this Barca team? Are we playing him as a wide forward? Is that where he's really going to do his best work for Barca? Keeping in mind that Liverpool and Barca play, oh, maybe not as drastically different football these days as it was once, but still quite significantly different football. You know, Barca are not going to be counter-pressing for an entire game. I think Coutinho is definitely worth considering in the long term, but again, I'm not sure in January he's going to drop in. And keeping in mind also that Barca are going to have to pay huge money for him. Exactly. You're always going to have the same problem that you'll have with Dembélé as well, where he's going to be expected to be some kind of saviour figure and just arrive straight away and, you know, completely revitalise the team.
Exactly.
I think that's an error, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
To bang the same drum that I've been banging for ages. And maybe this is just the reality of where Barcelona are going, but sometimes I'm not convinced Barcelona even know where they're going.
No.
In terms of their planning. But I think for a long time, what they've lacked so sorely is a midfielder who can control a game. And, you know, with Iniesta and his way out and with Xavi long gone now, Rakitic never really, I mean, I love Rakitic, I think he's a phenomenal player and I think he done a really important job in that treble winning team. But it wasn't the job of controlling a game. And if anything, I actually think he was less of the controlling midfielder in that setup than Dani Alves was, who I think actually took up a lot of the slack in that regard, which sounds a bit weird, but he was playing inside a lot and really touching the ball a lot. But again, it comes back to that. I think that's what they need. They need someone who will just get on the ball and dictate the tempo of a game from the midfield, who will slow down things at the right moment, who'll keep things ticking over at the right moment. And just, I don't know. Do they seem genuinely... I don't think Coutinho is that player. He's a much more explosive. He's a great footballer. But again, he's not going to play deep and control the midfield for Barca, I don't think. Or if he is, it's going to take a bit of a leap of faith to see that.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think that he's going to be someone that, if he came to the Camp Nou, which obviously there are several hundred million euros involved if that was to happen, I don't necessarily see him as someone controlling. I see him as more of an attacking player, either as a left winger or maybe in Iniesta's position, because obviously Valverde has reinvented the team. He keeps sort of experimenting with different tweaks and formation. And if someone of Coutinho's caliber came, he probably would adapt the formation again to suit his needs and his skills. But I don't necessarily think that he would control the game as such. He's someone much more vertical than that.
Well, yeah, exactly. But here's the thing. Maybe that's not what Barca want. Maybe, you know, this is just the old dramatic of me banging a drum that's not going to happen anymore. But
Very true. I think
it's much more likely that he is an Iniesta-type figure. And I say Iniesta-type because I think comparing anyone to Iniesta is really unfortunate and should be avoided. But in terms of what his job in the team would be, I think it'd be much more comparable to him. After that, I mean, who did he go for? I don't know. I think it... Even though, again, I think there's a risk of presuming that someone's going to walk in and be Xavi, I think... for sure Verratti made sense. Whether you could get someone like that's difficult, and that's a different question. But I think he's the kind of player that makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
that, Barca to be looking to bring in.
That was a player that in our first podcast, we only started the podcast in the summer. We had a couple of episodes that, you know, they were the most popular episodes we published actually during the August window. It was all about Verratti, but obviously PSG don't seem to like us very much now, and I pretty much doubt they'll give us the arguably the best midfielder. So changing gears a little bit, there was Champions League draw. Well, there will be a Champions League draw happening fairly soon. We are recording this on the Thursday evening. And we don't really know the rival yet. Everyone seems to think it's going to be Chelsea. Catalan Radio said there's 44% of possibilities that that's going to be the case. But if you had to pick a rival for the next phase, would you go for a challenge like Chelsea would be? Or would you be sort of trying to get either Roma or Besiktas, who arguably people say that are the least capable teams still left in the competition?
Yeah. It's just smart not to want to, especially this time of the year when there's a lot of congestion in the fixtures. I think there are very few coaches who would say to you, yeah, I want to play the toughest possible rival at that time. At the same time, like, obviously you need to maintain a certain degree of competitiveness and prepare yourself for the stages after that if you're going to go through. I think Roma are probably a decent shout, actually, in the sense that, you know, it's not going to be a walk in the park at all. But they're relatively familiar for Barcelona. And also, I think Roma's position and getting out of the group that they got out of maybe doesn't tell the whole truth about how good they were, in the sense that I think Atletico really conspired to mess up. And I think that when it comes down to Atletico, we're actually a significantly better team than Roma. So I think, yeah, of the options on the table, that would be the one that I would get. Besiktas, it's a bit of a weird trip, and I'm not sure that I think you want to avoid those kind of journeys into particularly hostile territory, even if Barca obviously have a lot of exceptionally experienced players in the team. In the current team, they also have some young players that I wouldn't necessarily bet my house on in a sort of particularly challenging environment like that.
Yeah, that's right. Personally, is what you mentioned. As long as we don't get Atletico Madrid, which obviously seems quite impossible because they're no longer there, I think I'm quite happy. So we always ask all of our guests the same question, and it's always very telling. So here it goes. Who is your favourite player at Barca, and you cannot pick Messi?
So who? At Barca present or at Barca of all time?
Just now. I mean, okay. All time would be a different, very good question.
Yeah.
but no,
that's
currently.
A good question. I'm drawn towards, I mean, this is a much easier question now than it would have been a year ago or a few years ago, but I'm drawn towards two options, but one of them I think is too obvious. So I think I might say Piqué.
Okay.
I think for all that he is a very divisive character for some reason, because people seem to not like fun, basically, you know, in the internet age we like to get annoyed at things. I think he's absurdly important, and he's absurdly important to now three Barca teams, and I don't think you can replace him in any of those teams, certainly not with the people who run the books, and then even just signing any player in the world, I'm not sure you can replace them. I really like him, and I know he's going through a bit of an odd phase just now, but the thing I like about him the most, I think, is how he really rebounded in that first Luis Enrique season. There was a point when he was, you know, he was looking like he was on his way out of the team.
Definitely.
I remember it really well, actually. And I think the gauntlet was kind of laid down to him. He said, well, you know what? No, I'm going to come back. And he came back to a level that was as good as he was at his peak in the Guardiola team. If not better, actually, I think he became a more mature defender. And he didn't have Puyol alongside him. Putting Piqué aside, because I think it's important to also look to the future. And I know you've asked me for one, but I'm just going to cheat a little bit. I think Umtiti and Ter Stegen both, if not already, have the potential to go down as some of genuinely great players of the last 20 years at Barca. Both, I think, are phenomenal.
Yeah, I hope you're right with that one, because certainly they've got a lot of years ahead of them. And based on what we've seen this season, they certainly are a couple of players that we should be able to hold on for you know, at least the next decade. And they've got a decisive part to play in the future. So that is great. So we're about to finish. I want to ask you a question at the end, a bit of a surprise question.
Okay.
But before that one, what do you think Barca need to improve, if anything, to be able to win the treble this season?
They're not good. I mean, at the risk of sounding stupid, I don't think they will win the treble this season.
Okay.
So
what's missing?
Well, without repeating myself again to go back, I don't think that they control games well enough. But then at the same time, also, I mean, here's the two. Okay, so to go back on what I said before and to qualify again. In my view, you either have to be able to control games well enough to beat pretty much anyone and not suffer too much within reason, or you just have to be so outstandingly good in both areas that that's not a problem. And I don't think in the forward line, this Barca team is outstandingly good enough, Messi aside. And, you know, if Suarez hits top form again, that's great, but there's still a third link there that I don't think can paper over the cracks. So, I think they need some serious attention in the midfield. That's the place where I think they need them. And it's the place where they've needed the most work, by the way, for about, what, 4 or 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And then at fullback as well, I think there's a significant step down from where they were a few years ago, even if I think Jordi Alba actually at times this season has been genuinely outstanding. So I think there's a little bit in the defence to be done, and there's a little bit in midfield to be done, and then also so actually, yeah, it's got that. In three lines of the pitch, including up front, they need a bit of attention to be a safe bet, as such as a safe bet can exist for a treble winner.
Okay.
After that, look, it's football, things can happen. I mean, the other thing is that I would add, I think in general the level in Spain this year is lower than it's been for a long time. I think across the board the big teams are playing generally worse than they have for a good few years, and I'm trying to remember the last time it was like this. So I think to win the league this year, to win La Liga, I think it's going to be the case of just who makes the least mistakes. And even if Barca, you know, given up a draw at the weekend or whatever, they haven't lost yet. And I think in general, looking at the table right now, without having played amazing football, they're in a very good position. And I think, you know, that I could see them seeing the league out and winning it without being genuinely outstanding. In the Champions League, it's a cup competition, so a bit of fortune can help you, but there are some really intimidating teams right now. I'll be really interested to see how Manchester City do in the knockout stage.
I would say that Manchester City are the favourites in everyone's mouth at the moment. The Champions League doesn't restart again until February, so things could change until then, but they do look very strong. I think that Barca's consistency will hopefully help us develop into a better team, and, you know, in 3 months' time or 2.5 months' time, we may be in a far better position. I've got high hopes of Dembélé. I'm not quite sure who we're going to sign. I would say someone that is, as you mentioned, maybe not necessarily a controller, but an attacking player that can play, that can sort of run deep from midfield and push forward is a necessity. So let's see where we are. Now, my question at the end, this is the last question. I would assume most of our listeners don't know this, but you seem to really like Girona.
Yeah, I love Girona. Yeah.
What was the connection there? Could you tell us?
it's a really lame connection, actually. So, I mean, like, so for starters, Girona is like the first place in mainland Spain that I really visited. So, Catalonia, Spain, you know, at the risk of offending anyone.
Yeah, of course.
And I have some good memories about that when I was a teenager. But basically, when I finished university and I started writing on football, I wanted to write in Catalan as well, because I'd learned some Catalan and I wanted to do some writing of articles. And I was reading this site at the time called La Jornada Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys who ran it was a massive Girona fan, and it just kind of caught my attention. And I was like, okay, cool. So, you know, tell me more about them. And he kind of started to unravel the story of the club to me, which I thought was fascinating, because especially at that time, you have to understand, and you will know, but our listeners maybe won't, Girona were really not a club of note. I mean, even compared to other Catalan clubs of sort of similar size in the second division, they'd never played in the top flight. The closest thing they'd even came, and this was before they'd even got to the playoffs, the closest thing they'd ever came to playing in the top flight was before the Civil War. And most of the people in the city didn't even support them. They were more interested in basketball or Barca. So there was just something that kind of intrigued me about them. They were like about as big an underdog as you could ever think of. And yeah, it caught my eye and I kept paying attention to them from there. And then when the first almost promotion came under Roby, and they played some genuinely outstanding football that season, and it just kind of added more passion to it. And I love the city, I love the club. Well, I maybe don't love some people at the club. It could be a little bit difficult to deal with, shall we say. Technically, I own shares in the club. I'm still not entirely sure if I do, because they've never, even though they took the money, they never gave me a certificate. So that's it's another story for another time, and not what I'm sure I'm going to get an answer to.
No, you won't get an answer from me, I'll give you that.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure I'll get an answer from anyone, to be honest. But for better or for worse, yeah, I have a soft spot for them, and I always wanted to do well, and I think it's really amazing to see them up this season, and even if the weekend was a bit crap, to be honest.
It really was. Are you staying up?
Yeah. No, I'm really confident we'll stay up. The thing I'm sad about, and maybe this is my bravado and foolish optimism, is that there was a few weeks there where it was starting to look, hey, maybe we could actually, you know, be a real outside shot of a Europa League place, even though it's a big ask, but they were not far off it, and still not far off it, but... No, I think we'll stay up. I think we'll stay up quite comfortably, and then it's about building. Because, I mean, there's players on loan here that are, you know, Maffeo, in the case of Maffeo, he's not going to be there next season. There's no doubt about that. So there's going to be some work to do in the summer again. But things are looking good, and I'm optimistic.
Yeah, good.
And it's a real pleasure to see people turning up at Montalivi and to see, the, you know, all these new young fans as well, which really makes me excited.
Yeah, brilliant. I have never had the pleasure of going to Montalivi in Girona to watch a live game. My brother was playing for Barca when he was little, and he literally just retired a couple of months back, actually. Oh. And he's played all over the area in terms of Reus, in terms of different places near Girona and even Lleida and that. But I've never really been to Girona, so that definitely has to be a place that I will visit soon. So that's all we've got time for today. I believe we are delighted you took the time to be on the pod. Sorry about the many technical problems before
we got online. Thank you so much for having me on. I hope that it was of some interest.
Of course. It was really, really telling as well. If our listeners wanted to follow your work, where can we find it?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. It's at LeeRodan89. I mostly just post sarcastic things there. So, yeah, that's the best place to find me. And then occasionally I'll link to articles and stuff. But hey, who wants to read that?
Yeah. Well, I do. I want to read that. I've been reading all of your Girona articles, that's for sure. And we'll be sharing your work from now on the Barcelona Pod account whenever we see it. So, Lee, once again, thank you very much. Have a great evening.
Thanks a lot, man. Good night.
Thank you. Superb. So that closes it. As I just said, huge thank you to Lee Rodan for giving his time up for us. I really do hope you enjoyed the interview. It was a pleasure to be joined by a former ESPN colleague on the Barcelona podcast, and I really do hope that you found that valuable. Now, we're getting to the end of the show, and this is our favorite part. It's the Ronda, which is the quick-fire questions that you've been leaving in the different social media. So let's get started. Warner Ranking 15 asks, why is Paco Alcácer not a substitute of Luis Suárez in league matches? I would have thought that Valverde is looking at his squad, he's assessing what everyone can bring, and I think that he still hasn't lost faith in Luis Suárez. And to be honest, I think that is the right thing to do. I do realize there's a lot of hate going on for Luis Suárez lately, but let's face it, I think taking Suárez out of the starting 11 would be irresponsible, because then you're not giving arguably our second best player the chance to get better while getting playing time. So as frustrating as it can be, and I do realize in terms of offsides, in terms of sometimes looking quite clumsy, you know, I understand that he can get frustrated, but I really do think that what he can bring to the team once he's fully recovered, and we've seen early signs of that, it is worth keeping him for. Matthew on Twitter asks, all the talk about January transfer is curious to me. Is it really possible to spend 100 plus million on a player that can't play in Champions League games for the rest of this season? I think that's referring to Coutinho. I can imagine Barca buying Griezmann or Coutinho if they can play in the Champions League. I think that's a good point, but obviously when you invest 100 plus million on a player, which, you know, we've only done once on Dembélé, I think that you're not just looking at the next 4-6 months, you're looking long term. And what I do realise, and I do accept and agree in a way, that buying someone who cannot give you an immediate impact in the most important competition would not be very reasonable from just that point. I do think that what the board would be looking at and what Barca would be looking at here is that a player that can bring greatness to the team immediately in the competitions he can play and in European competition after the summer and going into next season. Menyo on Twitter, Menyo Mendoza 5 on Twitter, asks, Denis Suarez is an absolute beast, so much potential. Do you see him developing into the next Andres Iniesta late bloomer? Very good question. I think Denis Suarez has glimpses of being a very good player. And in the last week, we have seen that much, much more often. There is clearly some potential in there, as you described. I just want to see him doing that consistently at first team level before we get too carried away. I think anyone being compared to Andres Iniesta is going to lose in the comparison, because similarly to Xavi and Puyol, I think they're unique players that, as much as we want to, they're never going to be cloned. But obviously having someone who can attack and bring something different to the team is what the team needs, as has been saying today. Denis Suarez may have elements of that, but I think he needs to be given consistent playing time, and he's not going to be given that unless he earns it. So I think it's down to the player himself, down to the manager to provide playing time for that to happen. Do I see him into the next Andres Iniesta? I don't. You know, I don't think there's going to be ever another Andres Iniesta. I do see him as a valid player if he can prove himself consistently, not just here and there against third division teams. Mandingo Connor Black on Twitter asks, do you think Suarez's meniscus operation over the winter will be enough to see him return to the form he needs to be in for Barcelona to challenge on all fronts? I'm not sure about the operation happening. I may have missed it, but I haven't really heard much about that. I do know that he was recovering in the last international break so that any operations would be avoided. So I'm not sure if that is actually happening. I'm not doubting you for a second. But if that was or wasn't the case, I do see Suarez coming back as the season develops. And I am confident, and I'm not going to say certain, but I am very optimistic about the fact that he could come back to form. Obviously, playing alongside Lionel Messi, everything is much, much easier. Dembele would add another dimension to the attack, and he would be a perfect ally up front in the final third. And I think the most support that Suarez has got in terms of having great balls provided to him is going to help him move forward. And I think with the motivation, and as you know, as the season does develop, I do see him coming back to form and slowly but surely regaining confidence. And of course, he may not ever go back to 2015 Luis Suarez, but I think he could be a very valid player that, let's face it, we cannot do without, because without a world-class striker this season, Barca is not really going to go many places. So I really do think that our only chance and our only option moving forward is that Luis Suarez comes back to form, and that is what I'm hoping for. Great question from Jose Moratalla on Twitter. He says, are FCB Femenis doing very well this season? Who would you sign from them from the USA? And my vote is for Alex Morgan. And he says, saludos. Muchas gracias por tu pregunta, José. I'm not sure. I think Alex Morgan has been one of the best players in the USA setup for a number of years now. She is one of the players that have been getting lots of recognitions around the world in the last few years. So I would say that she would be a really good addition. But then again, I don't really follow FCB Femenil as closely as I actually want to. It's just because of lack of time. But I think that I'm going to throw the question back to you and see whether you can convince Alex Morgan to come on the show and she can tell us all about it. So the challenge is back on your court. FCB News official at Twitter asks, with Dembele and Rafinha coming back from injury, is it necessary to dip into the January transfer window? Yes. In short, yes it is. I think we need a midfielder who can make an impact from the beginning. And I don't see Rafinha being that person, unfortunately. Luis Mazariegos asks, is Ozil a good enough option because of his passing, or does he not defend enough? That's a really valid point. I do think that because of what we explained earlier in the podcast, he is a very realistic, great option in order to improve our attack. And the fact that he doesn't defend too much, I don't think it would be a huge problem, because the way I foresee him being in the team, he will be in the Iniesta position. And of course, there are elements of defending, and we are fully aware that Ozil is not going to be a Makelele anytime soon. But I am sure that with Busquets' support and Rakitic alongside him, and you know, Valverde's guidance, he could improve in that respect. And let's face it, if he did join Barcelona, he wouldn't come here to defend. So I think it would be maximizing the abilities and skills of everyone around him in order to make him feel comfortable so he can focus on what he does best, which is moving forward. We've got time for one more question, and that is from Juan on Twitter. He says, with the injury to Umtiti, does our priority in the transfer window shift to a defender? Are there any great and reasonably priced options in January? And just thank you, I love the pod. Juan, muchas gracias. Thank you very much for your support and your question. I would say, as we explained earlier, I think that Barca's priority should not be signing anyone this transfer window, simply because Yerry Mina is going to join us almost certainly in the summer. I think the priority is to ensure that Mascherano doesn't leave and make sure that he's as happy as reasonably possible with the whole situation, and that he continues to be as effective as he has been for us for many seasons. In terms of, are there any reasonably priced options? I'm not quite sure. I haven't necessarily researched the market as such. As Lee explained, I don't think there are many great signings that ever happened in January. It's more of a rarity rather than the norm. Right, so that is all that we've got time for today. If we didn't get to your question, it's simply because I felt that it was sort of answered in the content of the show. But anyway, if you didn't get a mention, I'm really sorry that the problem is not any longer. But I am delighted to say that you're part of our community, and we really hugely appreciate it. In terms of moving forward to next time, I think episode 53 will have a certain Dan Hilton back, and I can't wait to have him back because, you know, I did miss him today. Hopefully the show was something that you enjoyed. Give us some feedback just at the Barcelona Pod on Twitter as to what you thought about the episode. And yeah, I think we'll see you next time. If you can support us on Patreon, that really would help. As I said, we need to get into the Christmas spirit. I'm not going to sing anything for you just yet. If you all tell me on Twitter to sing, maybe we will consider it next time, particularly when Dan is back. So I'm not going to say Merry Christmas yet, but Merry sort of December-ismas? Is that a word? And I do hope that you have a fantastic time with your families and your loved ones in the coming week. And we'll be back here with another Barcelona podcast next week. Forza!